Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin, and today on the pod, I sat down with Jessica Post, who is the executive director for the Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee. The DLCC focuses on state races and state legislatures and the importance of flipping those seats and flipping those legislators to Democratic control. And we talked a lot about the importance of state races and state legislatures, and also why it's so important to get involved.
Because look, if you're not willing to step up to shape the world, obviously the other side always is. So if you're willing to do even a little bit every week, you can make a huge difference.
Before we get to that interview, I would like to go through some listener feedback as well as announce the Hellion of the Week. So first, for feedback, obviously I wasn't able to get the journalist who had written on the Gaza conflict on the pod for this week. I am still in contact trying to get him on, so hopefully that will happen next week. This is a conversation that I want to continue. I've gotten a lot more feedback on the interview I did with Rabbi Cohen, and very legitimate, a lot talking about what I meant by the concept of a red line and, what would end support for Israel. Also talking about the two sides as the other side or creating monoliths out of this very complicated situation. And that is definitely something that's very valid feedback. I really need to watch my language and really learn to reshape my language around this subject. It is obviously, like we've said, confusing and complicated. And even just geographically, I mean, the difference between Gaza and the West Bank and the borders that are drawn there, geography was never my strong subject, but that's no excuse. Until I started researching this, I didn't even realize that Gaza and West Bank were two different areas. So there's so much to know and so much to learn, and I still feel so lost in the weeds of this particular subject. So as I continue to do more research and hopefully talk to more people, I will create space for this dialogue to continue, because while it can be so hard in this news cycle to focus on something that happened what feels like 3 years ago when it was really just a couple of weeks ago, I think it's important to keep talking about these really difficult subjects. And, even in the face of so many scandals and just a barrage of news, that it's really important to keep our eye on these sort of things and how, U.S.'s foreign policy has domestic implications. And I think that's really important. I also got a lot of feedback about Varsha. Everyone loves Varsha, which is absolutely no surprise to me. She, people are saying she's so smart, she's so clear, she's so good at explaining things, and all of that is true. I mean, she's invaluable to this podcast and often makes it easier for me to understand things and explains things to me and puts things in a way that just really illuminates the subject. And then, of course, with her background in history, she can really put these things in historical context. Our very own Michael Beschloss, for those who watch Rachel Maddow as obsessively as I do. So, I really love all of the feedback, and we're continuing to have this discussion over on the Facebook group, Dick Wads Be Gone. And I really appreciate the time that people are putting into thinking through this. And, I've said it before and I'll say it again, but Hellions are the goddamn best. It is my great pleasure to introduce our Hellion of the Week. So her name is Mariah Engdahl, and she is 16 years old and lives in Gillette, Wyoming, or just outside of Gillette. And there was a profile in the New York Times about her, and basically she and a small group of other students, about 9 or 10 other students, staged a protest trying to get more gun control in their state. And what's interesting is that not only is this a very unpopular opinion in the area, but it's also a very unpopular opinion within her family. The profile did a really good job of showing the tension between her beliefs and her father's and her mother's and her stepdad's, and how it all kind of points to this larger culture. And one thing that I really, really wanted to point out, because this frustrated me more than anything, was that her dad in particular would, and she calls them her uncles or a couple of guys that live with them on their ranch. They taunt her at home. And it was so fucking frustrating to just read that. You know, I mean, when she would come in, when he found out that she had done this protest, you know, when she would walk in from school, he would say things like, "Managed to get everyone's guns yet?" or "Take everyone's guns away yet?" And I mean, this speaks on a couple of different levels. The first one being is this dismissal of her from her family and the dismissal of her ideas. And maybe it's because she's 16, she's a kid. Maybe it's because she's a woman. Maybe it's because, I mean, it could be anything. But, you know, being dismissed at home like that is so demoralizing. And the fact that she deals with that and still has this fight in her is just remarkable. And just reading about her inspired me. And she really is standing up for what she believes in, which in this case, she's asking for background checks and tighter regulations on getting a gun. And specifically, she's focusing on this issue of arming teachers in school. So a school board nearby had voted to give teachers weapons with concealed carry permits. And she went to the school board of her area to basically campaign against that and say that she does not want the teachers armed and that adding more guns to an already fraught situation is not going to help anything. And what's interesting about this, too, is in this whole debate, what her dad keeps saying is that control is a bad word and that control leads to confiscation. He even says that he doesn't know where she learned any different. And so there's this idea that any sort of regulation on guns leads to this mass confiscation. I mean, this idea that Obama wants to take your guns. And I've never understood that. There in none of the rhetoric for people who advocate for gun control is there a clause that says we want to take your guns away. Although, to be really fucking honest, I'm personally at the point where I'm like, yes, I do want to take your guns away. Obviously, we are not responsible with them. And obviously, people do not understand the power and responsibility that comes with owning a firearm. And I understand that we have a Second Amendment. And I'm not saying that this is feasible in any way, but I am saying that that's not even the fucking argument we're making. We are saying we need regulation, we need control, we need stricter guidelines. And if we can't do that, then yeah, we need to take your fucking guns away. All Mariah is asking for is common sense gun reform. And this also fits in so nicely with our interview. Because as Shannon Watts has said before on the show, gun reform is something that really can be tackled at a state level, a state by state level. They're not making a lot of headway federally, but this is a really uniquely local issue. And I spoke to Jessica a little bit about this, that when you want to affect change on policies like gun control, doing so at a state level is often the only way to do it. And even not just your state legislature, but going even smaller and going to your school board and saying, "Hey, I don't want my teachers armed. Thank you very much." So even though this protest started with about 10 kids and then all but four dropped out when they had like a second meeting to decide what they were going to do, Mariah ultimately realized that this was something she had to do alone because, as she said, going in with a group might look like we're angry or it will look like an assault. And she's tackling this with such poise and consideration. And she even says, like, we can't go in angry or they're going to think that we want to take everyone's guns and melt them into a statue of Obama, which I thought was very descriptive and very funny. And she's doing this at 16. And she's standing up not only to her community and to her state, but to her family. And that kind of resolve and that kind of inner fire, I mean, this is what we're talking about when we talk about how things are changing, how the political landscape is changing. You know, it's not these huge blue waves. I mean, that's definitely part of it, but it's 16-year-olds in their communities who are upset and who are fucking angry because you know, school shootings are something that they can anticipate now and they think that might happen to them. She even says that once a kid brought a gun to her school and they had to evacuate and he ended up killing himself. And she also talks about, you know, the epidemic of mental illness around guns and how many gun deaths are actually suicides. And that sort of nuanced understanding of the issue is so impressive. And she's this single blue dot in a family, a state, a school that is all seemingly against her. And she just keeps going and she makes the speeches and she goes to the meetings. And I am so impressed. And honestly, just this is the most hellion behavior that I found this week. So Mariah Engdahl, you are a hellion. You are amazing. Please keep going. I know it can be hard, but keep going and you will affect real change. Tomorrow is National Gun Violence Awareness Day and the start of Wear Orange Weekend. And people around the country are coming together with a simple message. There's more we can do to end gun violence. And I love that every town reached out to us to do this ad, especially because of the hellion this week, Mariah, who's standing up in her own community, and the conversation I had with Jessica Post about how to affect real change in your area. So orange is the defining color of the gun violence prevention movement. Show your support by wearing orange tomorrow and post a picture using the hashtag #WearOrange. And like I said on Monday, we will also be monitoring the Wear Orange hashtag, and we'll be sharing pictures of people wearing orange. Every year, Every Town for Gun Safety and a broad coalition of partners call on Americans to wear orange for National Gun Violence Awareness Day, both to honor the more than 90 lives cut short and the hundreds more wounded by gun violence every day, and to demand action towards a future free from gun violence. Join the movement by wearing orange this Friday, tomorrow, June 1st. And don't forget to post your pictures online using the hashtag #WearOrange to show the world you're committed to ending gun violence in every community. You can also go to Everytown's website at wearorange.org to find an event for Wear Orange Weekend of Action. Together, we can stand up, speak out, and wear orange to raise awareness about gun violence. Today's guest is Jessica Post, Executive Director of the Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee. So welcome, Jessica, and thank you so much for joining us.
I'm so happy to be on, Devin. Thanks so much.
Of course. So can you tell me a little bit about the Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee and your initiative, Flip Everything?
Well, thanks for asking. So we are the only party committee, the only organization exclusively devoted to winning back state legislatures and maintaining and building democratic power in the state. And so that's important because when Democrats control state legislative chambers, when they have power in state legislative chambers, big things can happen. So for example, in Virginia, where we picked up 15 seats, the Virginia House was able to pass Medicaid expansion. And we're still waiting for that to be passed in the Virginia State Senate. But if you look at like Washington, where in 2017, we helped flip the Washington State Senate, we've seen advancements in automatic voter registration, reproductive rights, and voting rights. So many things that affect the day-to-day lives of your listeners are really determined in the state legislatures. And so that's why it's so important to elect additional Democrats and to really diversify those state legislative bodies.
Yeah, we have a saying on the show. We like to say local politics is sexy because it's definitely not as maybe fun, if that's the right word, as the big federal elections, but it's so directly impactful. So I want to ask you a little bit about this concept of building the bench and why getting people into state office and particularly state legislatures really helps the Democratic Party in the long run?
Well, I think there's two things. I mean, first, if you think about U.S. senators like Claire McCaskill or American presidents like President Obama or Jeff Merkley in the U.S. Senate or John Tester, many of them started their careers in state legislatures. So really, you're building important talent who's taking and developing legislation, but also you're choosing the people that govern your state. You know, often if you think about what one member of Congress might do versus the Speaker of the Oregon House, Tina Kotek, who happens to be our chair, she's really helping govern Oregon in a real way. And so I think while it's important that we're building the next generation of federal leaders, we're also electing leaders who are truly making deep decisions. Another great example is Stacey Abrams, who, as many of your listeners might know, right, just won that gubernatorial nomination. Stacey was both on our board and also she was the House Democratic leader, the minority leader in the Georgia State House of Representatives.
Yeah, we actually had the pleasure to interview her last year when she had first launched her campaign. So speaking of building talent, and not just for federal positions, but just within your state, what makes a successful campaign?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I think first, I mean, the reality is if you have a strong position on a specific issue, or if you've done anything to give back to your community, you're qualified to run for office. And you're definitely qualified for the state legislature. So I used to work at Emily's List. I was on the federal campaigns team, and I spent a lot of time recruiting women to run for office. And there they say if it takes about a woman to be asked 9 times to run for office, whereas men often wake up and see a congressman in the mirror, no matter how old they are.
Yeah.
So first, I should just say, you know, Devin, you should run. You're qualified to run. And certainly the women out there listening to this podcast, you're qualified to run too. So if let me be the, hopefully not the first, but if I am, let me be the first to ask you, can you run for office? And to tell you, you should run for office.
Right.
But to answer your question, I think a great campaigns are really grounded in candidates that really understand and listen to voters in their communities, that are willing to put a lot of hard work in. And at the state legislative level, obviously fundraising and money is important to send out those direct mailers, to do digital ads and maybe even television ads and radio ads to let people know who you are and what you represent in a mass way. But in many states, like if you think about the Montana legislature, where people sometimes get elected by fewer than 1,000 votes, or the New Hampshire legislature, same situation, really the way you can get elected to these roles is by knocking on doors and getting to know the people in your community. And so the best candidates are people that are really willing to put the work in, to listen to people in their community, and then to say to those people when they get elected, how am I doing? Like, am I representing you? And gaining that feedback from the community. And so because of that, there are so many people that would be great in office that often don't know it.
Yeah. And I think that also points to another thing that's going on, is that more Democrats are running than ever, including in districts that are not historically competitive. And we've seen this shift. Do you have a theory as to why that is? I mean, obviously, this is a very serious political shakeup in the last year and a half since Trump was elected. But are there other things that have compounded that?
Well, you're so right. It's so far, and there's still some states where the filing deadline to file your paperwork to run for office have not passed yet. But we have more legislative Democrats running in any this year in 2018 since any year since 1982. And 41% of the people running so far are women. So that's a high water mark. This is the sea change that we're talking about, that these legislatures may experience the kind of shakeup that we saw in the Virginia House, with the Virginia House, 11 new women went into office in a historically very white, male, and frankly, very affluent legislative chamber. So it changed a lot having that many new women. So I think there's a few things that are happening. I mean, the first is that I shared a panel recently with Kelly Converse Fowler, one of the delegates elected in Virginia. And she's the first Filipina elected. She's a teacher. And she really had not been involved in electoral politics at all, wasn't involved in politics until after the 2016 election happened. And she went to the Women's March with her daughter, and she said she wanted to be able to look her daughter in the eyes and said that she did everything she could after Trump was elected, when Trump started to affect this country, that she stood up. And so I think the reality is many other conversations of that type are happening. And we are seeing record amounts of activism in the states, from grassroots contributions to women, especially that have never volunteered before, walking into campaign offices and just simply asking what they can do. And for many of these women and activists, especially, I think, also people of color, they're stepping up and they're saying running for office is a natural extension of that activism. And in addition to that, they are saying that that they really want to keep some of these Republican incumbents in their individual state legislative districts campaigning for their own seats instead of spending their money and resources in these other swing battleground seats.
And, you know, you mentioned women, 42% of the candidates or running are women. And that feels like a very significant shift. I know you said you worked at Emily's List, and 16, 17, 18,000 women have registered to vote, and their last biggest number was something like 900. So is there something changing about the way this country views women in politics, maybe in the wake of Hillary Clinton, or just because of who Donald Trump is, or other reasons, that the way women are viewing politics and political involvement, and then the way the country is in turn viewing them? Is there a shift there?
I certainly hope so. I mean, I think there's a sea change happening in American politics right now around the involvement of women in campaign offices. I mean, the reality is, if you went into a Democratic campaign office at any place in the last decade, the stalwart activists in those campaign offices were often women retired teachers in their 60s. So women have always fueled political movements in America. And I think finally now they feel empowered to step out front and break some more glass ceilings in America.
Yeah, I feel like retired teachers are the unsung heroes here. I know a lot of retired teachers who are just like, you know what? I got some more shit to do.
Yeah, there were busloads at the first women's march.
Yeah, it's so true. And I also want to, again, we mentioned Stacey Abrams. I kind of want to go back to that for a second. Now, she's obviously in a gubernatorial race, but in her primary, what I think was so compelling about that race between Stacey Evans and Stacey Abrams was that there were vastly different strategies on how to win the Democratic vote. Stacey Evans focused more on winning Republican and independent voters, and Stacey Abrams focused more on basically people who didn't vote and marginalized and minority communities. And is there an internal debate in the Democratic Party about the best way to approach voters and how to get Democratic voters excited and to the polls, or is there a focus on maybe flipping these never Trumpers or independents or something of the like? And I know it varies state to state, but if there's like an overall theme that you can speak to.
Yes, I think there definitely is. I think there's a lot of I think there's a debate going on within the Democratic Party about the way forward. And I think there are some people that think the way that we need to do this is run centrist Democrats, reappeal to Trump voters, appeal to moderates, and do it that way. And I think there are others that are seeing the increased mobilization of communities of color, the activism that we've seen in campaign offices, and then saying that that could be a viable strategy, registration and mobilization to win statewide elections, especially in states like Georgia, where you have the potential to elect to sort of run on a very Obama-like coalition, which would be an increase of suburban white voters, an increase in sort of these like multiracial coalitions with the large populations of you know, Asian Americans, African Americans, Latinos. It's growing in Georgia, and getting those people registered to vote. So I definitely think that there is a pathway forward to do that in Georgia. When I was at Emily's List, I worked with Abrams and her team, and I saw some of the analysis that they did, and I think it's a completely viable path to win in Georgia.
Yeah. Do you think other states would follow that model as well? I mean, there's a lot of demographic shifts all over the country. Do you have an opinion as to what would be the best way forward, or does it really depend?
I think it depends. I mean, every district is different. You know, if you're trying to win voters back in rural Iowa, it may be difficult to do the same sort of proven coalition building that we've seen from Leader Abrams in Georgia and sort of registration and development. That formula may not work in different parts of America, but it certainly could work. And I think after 2016, we need to we needed to consider all strategies. I mean, part of what we do at DLCC is make sure strategies are customized to states and districts. We never sit in Washington, D.C. and prescribe an exact strategy for a state. We always work in partnership with people in the state, analyze the composition of the electorate with our advanced analytics team, work with our political team to figure out a path forward. So I think what Abrams has done and is innovative and interesting, and I'm excited to see it come together this fall.
Kind of getting in there and really massaging each district and figuring out the best strategy. That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
When, you know, we've talked a little bit about, you know, how women have gotten involved in campaigns, maybe behind the scenes more, and now there are more women running. If someone doesn't want to run, you know, for whatever reason, maybe they hate public speaking. I'm obviously not one of those people, but what are some other key ways that you can get involved besides running?
That's such a good question. And I would say people should reconsider what running for office is first. So this is me asking folks on the phone a second time to run for office. But so you don't have to, you know, address the Democratic National Convention or give a giant public speech. You may just have to talk to a small group at the Rotary Club and then talk to people over their through their screen doors while you're door knocking. So it may not be as bad as you think. But I think there are a lot of other ways to get involved. One is to support women that are running, to find a candidate in your community. And at the state legislative level, and I know you're making local politics sexy on this podcast, but I think if folks decided to help a state legislative woman win her office, they would find it pretty incredible. A lot of that work, you're working side by side in very small campaigns. You may be door knocking one side of the street and your candidate's knocking on the other side. And then there's also incredible stories. You know, for example, in Delaware, there's a state legislator that I talked to during session who actually had changed his mind about making medicinal marijuana legal because one of his campaign volunteers needed medicinal marijuana for one of the diseases that the volunteer was facing. So you also have this sort of like outsized influence over people in government if you're passionate about a particular issue. And I've seen that, you know, as the stance in America on LGBT equality evolved, you would hear people say, this volunteer in my campaign office wanted to marry her partner. And I was so compelled. I saw their, you know, love story evolve in front of me. And now I'm in favor of marriage equality. So I think there's a lot that can be done in terms of influencing issues that way. And then also, you know, fundraising, amplifying their messaging on social media, like all of these things are easy ways to get involved and to shape the world. Because look, if you're not willing to step up to shape the world, you know, obviously the other side always is. So if you're willing to do even a little bit every week, you can make a huge difference.
So can you give an example of, to make local politics sexy, as is my mission in life, can you give an example of an issue that maybe doesn't really, that federal government can't really address that, but that would move in the state level? So I think an example that we hear a lot is with abortion rights or gun control. Often those are issues that move glacially at the federal level, but can really be put through state legislators and have laws in the state. Are there any other issues like that that you can speak to that that really do well in the state legislative area?
Well, I think the biggest success story we have is the movement around marriage and LGBT equality, where there were things in advance of the Supreme Court decision during the fight for marriage equality. The fight started and continued through states. It worked its way through state legislatures, and that continues to be true. And so the modern version of that now is the fight to end the controversial practice of LGBTQ conversion therapy. And so you're aware that, you know, these controversial camps, youth are sent away to sort of pray away the gay, so to speak, as has been sort of said. So really controversial practice. In 2016, we flipped four state legislative chambers. And so right away, the Nevada legislature moved to ban the practice of it. The New Mexico legislature moved to ban the practice of it. And then when Democrats flipped the Washington State Senate in 2017, the conversion therapy was banned there in 2018. And so it's unbelievable that that's still legal. But this is one of the many places where people are just not equal in different states because of the way state laws play out.
Right. And something like flipping in 2017 and passing legislation like that in 2018, I mean, that's basically instant gratification as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. They passed 300 bills in Washington and the federal government moves at just an absolutely glacial pace. So And imagine it was just one race. It was a woman named Manka Dhingra who hadn't run for office before. She stepped up to run. The Washington Senate was so close that her race flipped it. DLCC, we were hugely involved, and we saw these changes happen. And it was incredible to watch from far away. But I mean, imagine if you were a campaign volunteer on that campaign, you'd feel like you had so much agency.
Yeah, I mean, I would feel like Wonder Woman. Like I changed the fucking world. So last but not least, Jessica, we like to ask all of our guests to tell us something that they're grateful for. This can be an overwhelming time to live in. There's lots of news. There's like 3,000 scandals a day. So what's something that gets you through the day? And it can be silly or serious or political or personal. I really like Netflix. Just anything that you are grateful for.
I think the thing that I am grateful for, and I would say if you talk to the staff here at DLCC, they'd say that this is what fills up their tank to come back to work, that fuels our fire. It's the action of strong state legislative women leaders in the states. And so there's a woman, our chair is the Oregon House Speaker, Tina Kotek, and she's an incredible leader. They were the first chamber that passed some gun safety restrictions after the Parkland shooting. And then I also think about just other incredible things happening with women leaders. The Speaker of the Maine House, Sarah Gideon, and her majority leader, also a woman, Erin Herberg, went into the Maine legislature and saw there was no room for nursing mothers. And so they said, we're going to put a lactation room in the Maine State Capitol. And so when I think about things going wrong in America, I think about that picture that we have in our offices of Erin Herberg and Sarah Gideon putting that lactation room in the state capitol. And I think progress is still happening in America. Even if it seems so bleak at the federal level, there are still women that have power and agency in the states that are making real change.
That's amazing. That is really fantastic. And again, why local politics is sexy. Sometimes it's really what you can do in your communities that's so important. Well, thank you, Jessica, so much for sitting down with us. This was very enlightening conversation. And where can our listeners find you and the DLCC on the web and on social media?
Well, thank you. So listeners should check out races.dlcc.org to adopt a woman candidate. They can find, I think we have 80 candidates up and 52 of them are women. So if they're interested in supporting a woman running for office, we feel great.
That's amazing. I'm sorry. That just blew me away.
Yes. And more to come. I'm at Jessica Post on Twitter and then DLCC is at the DLCC. So we'd love to hear. We're also on Instagram now as well. The DLCC on Instagram. So we'd love to hear from folks out there. And if they're looking for ways to get involved in their communities, they should hit us up on social media. And we'll connect them with a great state legislator if someone in their area isn't on races.dlcc.org.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again. And it was a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you so much, Devin. Thank you for your podcast. We're all listeners and excited about it.
Oh, good. I love that. All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
All right, Hellions, that is it for me. I really loved speaking with Jessica about the importance of local politics and how to get more women involved. Like she said, you are all qualified to run. And if that's something that you feel you can do, that is one really great way to jump into your community and affect real change. I mean, I hope Mariah Engdahl runs at some point. And I hope that we all take lessons from her to fucking stand up. And even when everything is against us, we can do it because we have this community. And, you know, all the discussion, all the feedback, all of the support, this community is what keeps me going. And hopefully what keeps everyone going. I will be back here on Monday with Varsha. And until then, have a great weekend, raise some hell, and remember to be kind.